This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Air travel accounts for nearly 3% of global carbon emissions. Today, energy producers worldwide are taking action to decarbonize aviation using Honeywell UOP technology, like the Ecofining process, which turns biogenic fats, oils, and greases into high-quality renewable fuels, and the ethanol-to-jet fuel process that can produce sustainable aviation fuel with 80% less carbon emissions than conventional jet fuel. Honeywell UOP, leading the energy transition the world needs. Learn more at uop.honeywell.com.
This is C-SPAN's The Weekly. I'm Steve Scully in Washington. The headline says it all. The secret IRS files, troves of never-before-seen records reveal how the wealthiest avoid income tax. Senior reporter and editor for the publication that broke the story, Jesse Eisinger, says it speaks volumes about America's tax code, how the wealthiest Americans are able to skirt the system, and it's all legal.
So essentially, these great stores, these unbelievable stores of fortune and wealth that we haven't really seen since the Gilded Age over 100 years ago, well over 100 now. We haven't really seen these kind of fortunes since then, and they're really substantially untouched by our tax system. You can give it away or build it up and keep it in ways that we'll just never see the tax man.
More of our conversation in just a moment. ProPublica compared how much in taxes the 25 richest Americans paid each year to how much Forbes estimated their wealth grew in that same time period. This is a story generating a lot of attention, including this from CBS News.
When most of us get paid, so does Uncle Sam.
You're really taxed a lot. You're taxed more than you should be, probably.
But nonprofit investigative journalism organization ProPublica obtained never-before-seen IRS information and found the 25 richest Americans sometimes paid little or no federal income taxes. That includes Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, Michael Bloomberg, and Jeff Bezos, now the richest person in America. He paid no federal income tax in 2007 and 2011.
That courtesy of CBS News. So what does this mean when working-class Americans pay more in taxes than the multi-billionaires? What does it say about our current tax code? And will this story result in any congressional action? Questions for reporter Jesse Eisinger. He spoke with us from his home in Brooklyn. I began by asking him how billionaires like Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and Michael Bloomberg could get away with this.
Yeah, well, that was one of the remarkable findings, and obviously the way we started our piece. There are a variety of ways that the ultra-wealthy can actually get their tax bills down to zero. We're talking about federal income tax here. In a couple of the years that Jeff Bezos paid zero, in 2007 and 2011, he had offsetting deductions. When Michael Bloomberg did it in 2010, he had charitable deductions. When Carl Icahn did it more recently in 2016 and 2017, he could deduct the interest costs that he has on loans that he uses for his business. And we'll get into that in a little bit. So there are a variety of ways that these guys can get down to zero. What happens more broadly, and the bigger piece is that they're really outside of the tax system, these ultra-wealthy people, and they can really lower their taxes routinely, not always to zero, that's relatively uncommon, but have very low tax rates compared to their wealth routinely.
Early in your piece, which, by the way, is headlined The Secret IRS Files, you write the following. Taken together, it demolishes the cornerstone myth of the American tax system that everyone pays their fair share and the richest Americans pay the most. Can you elaborate?
Yes, I think that many of us harbor a sense that, the rich are probably getting away with something, but they also most people sort of understand that the wealthy are supposed to pay more in our tax system. The tax brackets go up as people make more money. So it doesn't mean that you make more money and you pay more dollars, but you also pay, or you're supposed to pay, a higher percentage of those dollars. And that's true for salaries. But for the ultra wealthy, it's not true at all. In fact, we have not a progressive tax system where the wealthy pay more as a percentage of their income, but a regressive federal tax system where the super wealthy pay actually less compared to their income. But what we really wanted to emphasize is that income is not the relevant measure. It's really not the significant thing for the ultra wealthy, because they don't really take income, or when they take it, it's a modest amount, or they can completely control when they take income. It's a very hard concept for average people to understand. But the basics here are that average people are in the tax system. We get salaries, and we get a paycheck, and taxes get extracted from our paycheck. And the ultra wealthy are really outside the system. They're not dependent on salaries. They take income when they want, at the time and place of their choosing, and it really helps them control their tax bills. And sometimes, as I say, they get down to zero, but very often they get taxed at a very low rate compared to what's really important, which is their wealth growth.
Which gets to the point that may surprise many people, whether you're Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Michael Bloomberg, multi-billionaires, everything that they're doing is perfectly legal.
Well, we don't know about everything that they're doing, but in what we wrote about was perfectly legal, routine and legal. This is not exotic and doesn't take expensive accountants and tax lawyers to do. This is kind of the playbook, and everybody has knows the playbook, but may have differences to degree in it. But essentially what this is in the shorthand is buy, borrow, die. That's a coinage of a USC tax professor named Ed McCaffrey. And what it is that you buy your asset or build your asset, in the case of Tesla or Amazon, and you hold on to it, and you watch it grow, and you watch it the stock go up, and then you borrow against it. And we don't have evidence that Jeff Bezos borrows a lot of money, but there are public filings that Elon Musk, Tesla's founder, borrows tens of billions of dollars, puts up tens of millions of shares of Tesla in order to be able to borrow, shares as collateral. And then you borrow to fund your lifestyle, or sometimes you fund your business interests and your hobbies. You can die, and even these billionaires, they will die eventually. And when you die, there are lots of ways that you can minimize or avoid estate tax. So essentially, these great stores, these unbelievable stores of fortune and wealth that we haven't really seen since the Gilded Age over 100 years ago, well over 100 now. We haven't really seen these kind of fortunes since then, and they're really substantially untouched by our tax system. You can give it away or build it up and keep it in ways that will just never see the tax man.
We're talking with Jesse Eisinger, senior reporter and editor for ProPublica, and the full story and all of the numbers on your website. You've answered part of the question that you pose in your article: how does somebody enjoying this sort of wealth explosion end up paying no income tax? So let me take that a step further. What does this say about the state of the American tax code?
Well, it's essentially built on a fundamental unfairness, where we expect the wealthy to pay their fair share, but they don't. And they don't substantially because we tax in this system income, or something that we define as income, and we don't tax something that we do not define as income, which is wealth growth, the appreciation of assets. When the stock goes up, if you haven't sold anything, you don't get taxed on it. And yeah, that's sort of a basic intuition that most average people have. Oh, well, if you haven't sold anything, then it's not worth anything yet. You haven't realized the gain. And it was upheld by the Supreme Court in a decision about 100 years ago that only income only comes from realizations. But what our point is that this is not written in stone and sent down from the word from God from Mount Sinai. This is not something that the system must be or has always been. It's not a natural law. This is just the system we've chosen to have. And the system that we've chosen to have allows the Bezos and Musks and Larry Ellisons of the world and et cetera, Bill Gateses of the world and all these people whose taxes we have to avoid taxation by avoiding income. And so they have this enormous wealth growth, and then they borrow against it to fund their lifestyles or their business, and then they can avoid it, they avoid the state tax at death, as I say. And so this is the kind of system that's worth examining and understanding in full so that people can go in with their eyes open and say, okay, yeah, it's fine for Jeff Bezos to be worth, you know, something like $180 billion and pay zero in taxes. What we're trying to do is say, this is the system we have, and this is the ability that they have to avoid taxes. And then the public can make a decision now about whether they like this system or not.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers that you outline in your piece. First of all, the median American household income is about $70,000 a year, and on average, the tax rate, federal taxes, at about 14%. If you're a couple earning more than $628,000, the tax rate is 37%. So based on the numbers that you saw for these multi-billionaires, if they paid some tax, what percentage was it?
Well, so those are tax rates. Well, the 14% is an effective tax rate. It's what people end up paying after their deductions. The 37% is the statutory rate, the legal rate, and that's what you would pay if you didn't take any deductions. That's the marginal rate. Every dollar after that amount, $628,000 or so, is taxed at 37%. What we found is that the top 25 billionaires in America pay effective tax rates of roughly about 15 or 16%. So in line with what the average American pays. But again, that's not really the key measure. The key measure is how this measures up against their wealth growth. And so what we found is that compared to their wealth growth, these guys are paying $3.40 in taxes, 3.4% versus 14%. And some of the ultra wealthy billionaires like Jeff Bezos, Bezos is paying roughly a dollar for every $100 that his wealth grows. And Warren Buffett, he's sort of the king of tax avoidance. He pays a dime, 10 cents. For every $100 his wealth grows, compared to $14 for the average person for every $100 that they bring in income.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Jeff Bezos, his now ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, who has been donating billions of dollars to charities. We learned about that recently. But one of the examples that you have, you go back to 2007, in which his income that year was $46 million. How is he able to offset that income to a lower tax rate? Because that's still a nice income, even for somebody who's worth multiple billions of dollars today.
Right. So, you know, what happens with Bezos in that year is that he's got a kind of variety of deductions and some expenses that he's allowed to write off on his taxes. And you kind of wipe out that income through those perfectly normal maneuvers, and you can get all the way down to zero. It's kind of a remarkable thing. What the point is that his wealth at that year grew by $3.8 billion. And so his income, you know, only $46 million, like that has nothing to do with his wealth growth, which is really the most important thing. That's what gives him the power. That's what continues to allow him to have control over the company and to buy baubles like the Washington Post or a yacht that's worth $500 million. Actually, he's got a yacht that takes the helicopter to his bigger yacht. And then he starts a space exploration company. That all emanates, of course, from his wealth. But the wealth has nothing to do with income. The income is extraordinarily modest compared to the wealth, only $46 million. And then he's got the ability to offset that. And in that particular year, he paid zero in federal income taxes.
Honeywell UOP technology is helping the world reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adopt renewable energy. With solutions for blue and green hydrogen, carbon capture, and renewable fuels, they're equipping energy producers, manufacturers, commercial transportation providers, and other heavy industries with the tools they need to deliver on their sustainability commitments. Honeywell UOP, leading the energy transition the world needs. Learn more at uop.honeywell.com.
Introducing Batiste Sweat Activated and Touch Activated Dry Shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste Dry Shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
Let me go back to your reporting, because you and your colleagues write the following, quote, "Our analysis of the tax data for the 25 richest Americans quantifies just how unfair the system has become." Do you sense that your reporting will result in any changes in the tax code, how Congress doles out these federal tax laws?
Well, boy, that's a very difficult thing to predict. We're just journalists, and we're not policy advocates, and we don't particularly see one policy as being superior to another or anything like that. What we're trying to do is highlight this system so that people really understand it. Because, as I say, people have this intuition that this has been true, or that the wealthy dodge taxes, but I don't think they knew the extent of it, and I don't think anybody really understood that somebody like Michael Bloomberg, who's got a private company that's throwing off literally billions of dollars that are coming down to him. It's not stock that's appreciating in a publicly traded company with unrealized gains. He's got enormous cash flow flowing to him, and he's able to offset that almost entirely so that he pays very, very low effective tax rates and then can actually pay zero in 2010. And so what we want to do is explain this to people. This has been true, been clear, to experts for a while, but I think it's been poorly understood by the broader public.
And I think the bottom line question is this, Jesse Eisinger: what is income? What isn't income?
Well, that's exactly right, is that we want to kind of let people start to question that basic assumption of the American tax system. Is income just really salary or just stock when you sell it? Most of these guys don't take salary. Jeff Bezos takes a middle-class salary of something like $80,000. And then you've heard, of course, of these famous tech CEOs who take $1 in salary, like Mark Zuckerberg or Larry Page. And so salary is unimportant for them. And then sometimes they sell stock, of course, but actually they find reasons not to sell stock and ways to not sell stock. So if they're monetizing their wealth so that they can fund their lifestyles, are they taking some form of income? At this point, debt that you get with putting up stock is not considered income in our tax system, but it could be, or we could define something differently. As I say, nothing has been written in the Hammurabi Code for thousands of years about unrealized gains not being taxable.
You look at the 25 richest Americans collectively, how much are they worth?
Well, now I think they're worth well over $1 trillion, quite easily surpassing $1 trillion, especially after the pandemic, because their wealth grew substantially in the pandemic as hundreds of thousands of people were dying and people were losing their jobs. It was one of the best years ever for billionaires.
And how did the story come about for you for ProPublica? What's the genesis of this reporting?
Well, we obtained a vast trove of IRS data covering thousands of Americans, really just kind of the 1% of the 1% of Americans, so not your average plumber, teacher's tax returns, but thousands of the wealthiest Americans covering more than 15 years. And we're not explaining how we got this information. We have a source or sources, and we're not explaining what we know and don't know about the source or sources, but we don't know a lot. We know some, but we don't know a lot.
How did you verify the information? What was the cross-checking, the fact-checking like?
Yeah, well, that was extraordinarily important, of course, because when you get a vast amount of information like this, the most important thing is to figure out whether it's valid, whether it's verifiable, whether there's something in it that has been manipulated. And so we were very, very cautious and very careful with the data and very paranoid. And we went to a lot of public filings. Politicians have filed, very wealthy politicians have filed their taxes over the years, and you could check there. And the court cases where tax information comes out, that's kind of obscure stuff, and we could verify information there. And then occasionally we went to private sources and asked them about information that only they could know, and that was valid. And pretty soon we had well over 50 validation points for the data, and it really easily surmounted our standards for verification. And then finally, most importantly, for the first story and for each subsequent story that we're going to do, we're going to keep to the same journalistic standard. We ran everything by the people who are mentioned in the story and asked them to comment on the facts as we had them, and they were all verified, and nobody disputed the facts in any significant way, in any really way at all, and that was its own verification. So there's no question that this is verified data now. And then the other question, of course, is what is newsworthy about it? We're culling it and being very careful and responsible stewards of this information and culling it for what we consider to be information in the public interest. And we publish this article, and we'll publish subsequent articles throughout the year.
And we should point out the original article at ProPublica.com is 35 pages in length, so some exhaustive reporting. You include this statement from Michael Bloomberg's office saying, quote, "The release of a private citizen's tax returns should raise real privacy concerns regardless of political affiliation or views on tax policy." Your thoughts on that statement, which you included in your piece, the title, "The Secret IRS Files."
Yeah, I just said that the piece may be long, but we hope it's readable. You can get to the bottom of it, and all the words are wonderful in it. we, of course, went to all the people we mentioned, as I say, and asked them to respond, and got responses from several of them, including Carl Icahn and Warren Buffett and Michael Bloomberg, and then included their comments because, it's just basic journalistic practice. And Bloomberg had a kind of veiled threat, or he said that he considered his privacy to be violated. And I guess I would have to say it's true that we did violate his privacy because we think that it's in the public interest that someone who was the mayor of New York City and ran for president and is one of the wealthiest people in the world has such a substantial income and so little in taxes that he brings in close to $2 billion of income every year and gets his taxes down to literally 3 or 4% on an effective tax rate and a fraction of that, half that, compared to his wealth growth. And we thought that that was in the public interest and that we have a First Amendment right to publish that information.
I want to go back to one other point. I know you're not going to release how you got the documents, but give us a sense of how big of a project that this was for you and the entire newsroom staff.
Yeah, well, it's millions of rows of data, raw data. And so we had to cull it. We had to clean it up. That wasn't my job. That I can't do that. I don't have that skill set. But my colleagues, Paul Keel and Jeff Ernsthausen, who are really great reporters, did most of that work. And we've now put it into a database that is usable, and you can search it. So that was a substantial amount of work, just kind of understanding what we had and all the schedules we had and what we don't have and how many years it goes back and what's reliable and what isn't, and you know, what you can understand from the data, how clean it is, all these kinds of things. So that took a very long time.
And what does this tell the average taxpayer, the middle class taxpayer, who is paying legitimately what the federal government says you owe, and these multi-billionaires are getting away with paying nothing?
Yeah, I think the basic point is that we have a system that is unfair at the root of it, that allows billionaires to be outside of the tax system. So middle-class taxpayers inside the system and has no choice about paying a substantial portion of his or her salary to the federal government, has no choice about where those tax dollars go, and the super wealthy are completely outside of that system. So they have every ability to allocate their dollars to their pet causes, both philanthropic and their hobbies, like space exploration, and that these things help to reduce their taxes, and that taxes are really a kind of afterthought for them.
You put a lot of information in the article and in our conversation, but are we missing anything? Did anything surprise you as you began this project and now as you look back at your reporting and research?
Well, as I say, I think it's pretty surprising that some of these guys can get down to zero. And I think we'll have a lot of surprising stories to come about people taking losses, generating losses and avoiding taxes, and the myriad ways that people can manipulate their taxes in legal ways to get away with not paying something, I think is pretty surprising. I have not lost my ability to be shocked and surprised by this. And I, often the cliche is that the scandal is what's legal, not what's illegal. And here I think that is really apt.
And a lot of questions about former President Donald Trump's taxes. Would you like to take a look at those?
Well, we're not commenting on that aspect of it, but obviously the Times did a very, very good job of going through the taxes. So those stories were, some of the best journalism of the last couple of years. And we're full of admiration for the Times on that.
So I'm going to go back to your earlier point, because you're a journalist and not a politician. But if you were to give members, for example, of the House Ways and Means Committee questions that they need to ask moving forward as a reporter, what questions should Congress look at?
I think the fundamental question is, are tax laws designed for the new form of Gilded Age wealth that we have today? That's the basic question. And people have started to raise that question and have policy responses to that, like a wealth tax from Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, or Ron Wyden is a senator from Oregon. He has a tax to tax unrealized gains. Do we have a modern day tax system? Could we design one that avoided the previous pitfalls with wealth taxes that other countries have experienced? Would that be the right strategy? Are there other strategies? Those are the kinds of questions to ask. Or do we stick to our old-fashioned income tax and just raise tax rates? And who does that actually hit? Because when you raise tax rates, you're not hitting the ultra wealthy. You're hitting the affluent. You're hitting the wealthy. People who are making $1 million, $5 million a year. That's a lot of income. But they're not the super, super wealthy. They're not the Jeff Bezoses and Michael Bloombergs of the world.
We're talking with Jesse Eisinger. He is a senior reporter and editor for ProPublica. What I'm hearing you say is that there will be many stories coming out of this in the days and weeks ahead.
We hope so. Yeah, we're hard at work. We've got a bunch of reporters on this, not just me, not just Paul and Jeff, but others. And they're working on stories as we speak. And we're going to work on some more stories. So we hope that we'll be publishing things that people find illuminating all throughout the year, maybe even longer.
We will look for more of your reporting. We should also point out that you're the author of the book, Why the Justice Department Fails to Prosecute Executives, the recipient of the Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting in 2011, formerly with the Wall Street Journal. What else can you tell us about your background, your career in journalism?
I've been doing it a long time, and it's gratifying to get such a big response, probably the biggest response I've ever had to a story. But that was last week, and this week my editors like me to know what I'm doing now, so I got to get back to it.
So keep on working.
Thank you. I will.
The website, ProPublica.org. Jesse Eisinger, joining us from Brooklyn, New York. Thank you very much for being with us.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me.
Jesse Eisinger, senior reporter and editor, his work available at ProPublica.org. I'm Steve Scully in Washington. A reminder, this podcast, The Weekly, be sure to listen and follow wherever you get your favorite podcast, and follow us on Twitter @C-SPAN Radio. I'm Steve Scully in Washington. We thank you for listening.